And I wanted to say thank you for making, I don't know, our time here. How many months has it been so far? Are we on month 6 or 7? Wow, it's amazing. But you guys still, for some reason, you still are making us feel welcome. So thank you very much for that. And you made my in-laws feel welcome today as they came and visited us. So thank you for that. I'll tell you, it's good. It's good to be here. We are in the middle of a series called Full. And I tell you, it is an interesting study. I have been convicted and continue to be surprised at what God is teaching me and urging me to do. But what I've found is that if you really study, it's very rarely just an academic exercise. When you really study, there are certain moments whenever God's going to actually tell you to do something. So it kind of makes me uncomfortable at times. Well, I'm going to tell you a little story, something that has something to do with what we're talking about. But Shelly and I had 2 honeymoons. The first one didn't go so well, and I won't go into that. The second one happened several weeks later, and we went to Disney World, right? Because that's the happiest place on earth, and besides Grapevine Church of Christ. And so when we went to Disney World, we were there on New Year's Eve. It was surrounding New Year's Eve. So New Year's Eve night, we went and we saw the fireworks. It was just fantastic, beautiful. But there were some rides we didn't get to go to. And back then, a 3D ride had just opened up. It was the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Is that what it was? Yeah, I mean, it sounds goofy now. But back then, man, it was a full 4D experience, you know, when the seats moved and they, you know, all that. Well, after the fireworks, they were open for 2 more hours, and we knew that if we did it right, we could get to that and not have to wait in line. So we kind of left a little bit after, right as the thing was ending, and we started walking, and we're just having a nice little stroll. Well, we get in a little group of people, and the group is going to the same ride that we are. I don't know who started it, but one person started to walk faster. And then the next person started to walk faster. And here we are, about 30 seconds later, in a full-on sprint with hundreds of people around us. Kids, I mean, parents dragging kids. And, you know, Shelly's in front of me. I don't know how she got in front of me, but she's in front of me. I tripped. I fall. I hurt my ankle. But I'm going, man. And we are trying to beat the crowd. And we did make it. And we were there towards the front. But I just felt this overwhelming sense of panic, like I'm going to be left behind here. Okay, and another instance that happened, I may be revealing too much about myself, but once at a Jonas Brothers concert, I was on the, it's for my daughter, I swear it was for my daughter. We were on the top, third floor of the arena, and we're it's over, and there's this huge crowd in the lobby, in this hall, as they're trying to get out. And we are getting out of the bathroom. Shelly and Liv are over here, and I'm on this side, and somebody starts to scream, as if the Jonas Brothers are there. And you start hearing another person scream, oh my goodness, another person scream. Finally, this entire crowd of preteens and sad parents are being hurled forward, pushed. People are screaming now because they're scared. And I'm thinking, how does this mob mentality happen? I've participated in it. Well, not the Jonas Brothers, but I've been there. And for some reason, you just get sucked into this group. And you find yourself right in the middle thinking, how did I get here? And why am I running to this goofy ride with a hurt ankle? Well, we're going to talk about that in a little bit. It's an uncomfortable conversation, but I think it's conversation that needs to be had. Let's pray. God, you are good, and we are so thankful that you speak to us. Thank you for allowing us the opportunity to be in a place that is safe, a place where the people are people who love you, and as many quirks as we have, we love each other. Thank you for letting us be able to experience this type of family. And Lord, if there are those here today who are on the outside, Lord, help them to find their way in. If they're on the inside, Lord, help them to look out and bring those people in. Lord, there is life in the body of Christ, and I pray that you would help us to find that. Help us to have ears to hear. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Well, last week I presented an idea and I presented a question, and the idea was this. Our culture, let me get my clicker out. Our culture is one of scarcity. We talked about scarcity, and we also talked about how our culture is one of not enough. We've been acculturated to believe that we don't have enough, that in a deep sense, we aren't enough. So what do? We work harder. We do everything we can to get things for ourselves, to get more for ourselves. And we try to get enough, not just physically, but emotionally. We try to get enough. We break our lives down into a series of efforts, pursuits. And like, you know, our life, it's almost like our life is a collection of boxes that we try to fill. The more we fill them, the more we try to find meaning, fulfillment to our lives. You know, if we put, like right here, our family and our relationships are in this box. We have our worship and service in this box over here. Time for myself in this box. And, rest right here. And maybe I need a bigger one, but I have rest at least in a little box. We try to fill these boxes one by one. And the thing is that these boxes are not, it's not just a normal box count. They continue to grow. The more we get involved in our culture, the more we see other people doing, the more we feel like we have to do, the more our box count grows. I mean, it's fun. Oh, here's holiday shame right here. Forgot it. Holiday shame is that, you know, that moment when you want to make sure that you're ahead of the people in your neighborhood. You know, you have the box where you have to make sure you got enough ornaments and decorations. You got to make sure you're that person. There's a lot of boxes that we have, and they keep growing. The question is, why do we try so hard to fill our lives with meaning through events, through stuff, through experiences and memories? We try really hard, and then that moment comes whenever we wonder where God is in our life. We try to think to ourselves, how is it that I cannot hear God? I'm talking to Him, and I pray, and I'm going through a difficult moment. Where is God? And the question I asked last week was, what if He wants to fill you, but we're already full? I'm using the illustration of boxes here, and I have to admit, I've got several boxes in my life. And what am I trying to accomplish? I guess at the heart of it, I have the strange notion that an empty box means an empty life. If I think to myself, if I don't have enough or do enough, or if I'm not enough, then what will people think about me? People might not notice that I don't have it all together. They might notice that I'm not the really cool person I exude. They might not notice. They might see I'm not fully in control. And I think the more boxes we try to fill, the more of our life we try to cram full, it puts this statement in our head that we have to continue to do and to be and to gain and to grab, because at the heart of it, I wonder if when we realize that we might fail or that we're not enough, maybe there's shame that comes after that. Shame is a whole different conversation, but shame and guilt are different. Guilt is the sense that I failed. Shame is the sense of that I'm a failure. Guilt is, I've done wrong. Shame is, I am inherently wrong. Guilt is, I didn't do enough. I'm not doing enough. Shame is, I am not enough. There's a question why we try so hard to fill, and we try so hard to gain things for ourselves so that we'll have enough. I mean, why do we do that? Do we want to be full? Do we want to be satisfied, or do we want to feel as if we're worthy? If we want to be full or to be whole, will our pursuits or our efforts ever be enough? I ask myself this question. We all want to say God's enough. We want to say Jesus Christ is enough. The Spirit of God is enough to fill us. We want to say that, but at the same time, we continue to fill and to do. And what we fill our boxes with has changed because our culture has changed over the years. It's changing right in front of our eyes. That's not a bad thing. It's just, it is what it is. And because of scarcity, we have become a people preoccupied with having enough. So we busy ourselves working, buying, selling, playing. Being busy has almost become a status symbol. Now, yesterday, I was thinking about this, and it is really perfect. Yesterday, I came across this right here. I don't know if this is legal to show, but I saw that. And I thought, wow, that is perfect. Busy mom. Let me go back. Busy mom. You know, it's not enough to be busy anymore, right? We have to be crazy busy. We have to wear our busyness on our sleeve. It's almost a status symbol. We tell people, how was your day? Oh, I'm so busy. And we kind of take pride in the busier our life is. We take pride in that. I've done that before. It's not as if our value is tied to our schedule, our self-worth. Now, when I think of being busy, the first thing that comes to my mind is the cell phone industry. It's about connection and all, but I think the cell phones have gotten more popular because they have preyed on our need to be needed. You know that need, you know, when you have a cell phone, you're always checking it and want to make sure, does anybody need me? Does anybody want to connect with me? There's this need to be needed. I think, I remember when I first met Shelly, she had a cell phone. She was paying $50 a month for 45 minutes a month. Back in 1996, 95. And it's interesting because the devices that we use, they've kind of changed the way we interact with each other and changed how busy we are. So here it is, on 2005, Pope John Paul II's funeral. See that? There's one person, you see one cell phone in there. Look at the bottom right, you see a cell phone. This is Pope John Paul II's funeral, and then you flash forward 8 years to 2013, and this is Pope Francis's ordination. That's just fantastic. The cell phones has changed us over the years. By the way, I found this commercial and I want to show it to you guys because y'all are so lucky. You've got this. You're born with a cell phone, right? And it's fantastic. But this is the way life used to be. Let's show this video real quick.
Can I try it first, Mom?
All right.
A new generation of affordable cellular phones at an incredible price breakthrough from Radio Shack, the technology store.
Hi, Daddy, it's me.
And now there's a totally portable phone at a price we dare the competition to beat.
Yes, we can. Okay, be there soon.
Radio Shack, the first name in cellular telephone technology.
So for $2,500, you can have connection. Status was expensive back then. $1,400 for a phone and $25 for a brick phone. My dad had one of those for his company. I just thought it was awesome. isn't that fascinating? And that was just in the early 80s. Back then, connection was status. If you had one of these, you were looked at in a certain way. And it's still the same way today. One study has shown that we spend more time looking at our screens than we do actually looking at our significant other. I think that's probably true. Okay, so I've done a little study. Here you go. 10 ways that we use our cell phone time. Here we go. Okay, browsing the internet, 24 minutes, average cell phone use. Checking social networks, 16 minutes. Listening to music, 15 minutes. Playing games, 13 minutes per day. Making calls, 13 minutes. Text messaging, 11 minutes. Checking, writing emails, 9 minutes. Reading books, 8 minutes. Watching TV, film, 7 minutes. Taking photographs, 3 minutes. And I tell you, this is what's interesting, is that this is average cell phone use. Average. 2 hours a day, average. And I would have to say this is even a little low. Texting, probably a little bit more than that. But I think what's interesting is making calls is only 13 minutes. We have phones, but we don't even talk to each other, but 13 minutes a day. There's also one study from Barna that shows that more than one-third of adults stop whatever they're doing to check their device whenever they get a text or a voice message. And about the same amount, a third, admit their personal electronics sometimes separates them from other people. And it's no different for people of faith, because out of this study, this Barna study, all their hyperconnectivity gives them 21% of these hyperconnected people will actually connect with God during a day. It's interesting. I'm right there. I've been there. So what's this doing with us? What's this doing to us, our constant connection? We talked last week about how it's kind of diminishing our home time, but we're busy. This connection is helping us be busy, but are we as full of God as we want to be? When we talk about this idea of full, what's commanding our attention? In a moment, we're going to be in Exodus 14, so turn to Exodus 14. I'm going to ask Hal Wasson to come on up. I'm going to have a conversation with some people over the next few weeks, and I'm bringing Hal up, and Hal's going to introduce himself if you do not know who he is. But I'm very excited about this. It's going to be fun. How you doing, sir? I'm going to see you. All right. Here, this is yours. I'm going to give this to you. All right. Have a seat, sir. Okay, so I've asked Hal some questions, and I'll ask him again, but just to kind of start off by introducing yourself, letting us know who your family is, and we'll go from there.
Okay. I'm Hal Wasson. Blessed to have a beautiful family. My wife heard I was up here today, so she went out of town. Blessed with two kids and their spouses, Chase and Shay, and Chelsea and Derek. And by the way, I'm going to be a granddad soon.
Fantastic.
Which I'm extremely
awesome.
Excited Very about. Excited. And by the way, he gets me up here. I just noticed he used the word, he's doing an uncomfortable topic, and he asked me to come up here. So, but I'm pretty much used to being uncomfortable sometimes. I am a football coach at South Lake Carroll, where the expectations aren't very high. And so that's what I do, and I'm a husband and a dad when we have time.
That's right. That's right. Okay, so I kind of felt bad because I've talked to some people who go on and on about the South Lake coach and this and that, and so I came in one Sunday and go, hey, I had to introduce myself a couple times to him, and I don't know if that was embarrassing more for me or you, but the thing is that I noticed this guy right here is a very busy man. I know there are several people in this room who are very busy. It's nothing wrong to be busy. I'm not saying that. But for our conversation today, I wanted to talk to Hal, because pretty much you do your entire year's work in the fall. Wouldn't you say? I mean,
no.
Okay. That's it. We're done. Thank you. Yeah. But you are very busy in the fall.
Pretty much.
Okay. So this is my question. How long have you been coaching?
34 years.
Okay. 34 years.
I know it doesn't look it.
Well, the question is, how have you seen the culture and the families of your players change in the last 34 years?
You know, that's pretty simple, really. When I started coaching, sports was peer-driven, mm-hmm. and today it's parent-driven. Mm-hmm. There's so many, playing sports, being a dad, being a teacher, being a preacher is pressure, and pressure is a good thing. But if you add stress to it, it's a bad thing. And we visit a lot more with our kids today about doing too much rather than doing not enough, mm-hmm. which is quite opposite of where it began.
Yeah. When did that start, do you think?
I think everything's driven monetarily.
Yeah.
And I think you can go out to any camp and people make you feel good,
right.
and they can tell you whatever. And everyone wants to keep up with the next guy, but we keep our place pretty simple. Just go out and simply be as good as you can be each and every day. And if you start trying to compare yourself with someone else, you'll never catch up. You can't do enough. You can't train enough. It's not going to happen, and you'll never reach success. So if you just can't keep it simple and say, I'm going to be as good as I can be today, that eliminates the stress.
Now, you've got a great personality and work ethic to be able to manage this type of a life, but you've seen it get intense, right? You've seen culture become more and more intense.
Absolutely.
Over the years. Yeah. So whenever you deal with your players, what do you teach them whenever it comes to managing their time at home, at school? What do you tell them?
Well, again, we try to, football's an easy game, but it's hard to play. Mm-hmm. Life's pretty much an easy game, but it's hard to play. And we really invest a lot of time in that aspect as far as saying, look, as long as you bring honor, your family name, your football team, your life's pretty simple. I didn't say easy, but if you dishonor your family name or you dishonor your football team, your life gets really complicated fast. And we like simple. And, you know, we're not a rule writer. We don't write a lot of rules. It's just go out and be as good as you can be. Balance your time. Mm-hmm. Balance your work ethic. It's not about time. It's about quality time. Yeah. And those kind of things. So that's kind of the way we...
Yeah, you said something the other day in our conversation that I loved. It's about investing versus spending. Can you talk about that for a second?
Yeah. You know, I think when I was a younger dad, you'd come in and you're exhausted. And Chase would always meet me with a ball at the door. And I would say, you know, here I've spent a lot of time with all these other kids. Now I better go invest some time with my own kid, because kids will always teach you more than you will teach them. Yeah. If you will choose to listen. And so through the journey, you realize as a parent, God has blessed us with them. That's our prized possession. That's it. That's number one. But if we don't spend the quality time and invest in their lives, pawn that time off to someone else to teach them what we should be teaching them, then we've got chaos.
What I found interesting in that, and you know, when it comes to kids or even anybody, whenever it comes to choosing to invest time with that person, do you find that those are restful moments?
Yeah, I do. When it's how you know, when you choose to change the way you look at things,
right.
The things you look at will always change. And when you have the attitude, I get to invest this time, mm-hmm. instead of, well, I have to go mm-hmm. do this, it changes your perspective. It yeah. changes your outlook, and people feel that in you.
Now, personally, I know, you know, Sally is what do they call that, a football widow every fall. How have y'all managed?
Well, when I initially started coaching, she was concerned about the time I spent at home. Mm. Over the last 15 years, it's when can you go back to the field house? So I have noticed that part of it. You know, I think there again, I actually, when I was a younger guy, you'd pray to meet someone that would invest what you want to do. And then again, God blessed me with that, because Sally really gets into coaching. If you've ever watched her at the game, she's leading the cheers up there and usually my biggest critic, if Chase isn't. So, you know, all that being said, I think we invest in each other's lives and invest our quality time with each other.
So have you ever felt like your schedule has managed you instead of managing
Oh, without
schedule?
A doubt. Yeah, I'm up here talking about it. But, yeah, you can definitely do that. But there are words like trust. Yeah. You know, do you really trust something? Can you sort of trust? No, you either trust or you don't trust. And I think you trust each other, to those guys around you and the guys that play for you, that they're going to do their job, and you're going to do their job. At the end of the day, that's all you can do.
Yeah. One thing I remember, in one of our very first conversations, I don't know if you remember saying this, but you painted such a great picture about there are moments when you have to just get in your backyard, you get a cup of coffee, and you just sit. Yeah. And you enjoy where you are.
You know, it's funny you say that, and I didn't think of this. You notice you have notes, and I don't. but one thing that I thought one day, I was out in the backyard, and I love sitting out there and listening to water. And Sally walks out there, and I said, man, this is a good cup of coffee. And she said, what makes it so special? Is it the cup? I said, well, you know what? Yeah, it's because I always drink out of the same cup. It's the cup. It's the, you know, the Keurig that makes it. It's the coffee itself. It's the scenery. It's the atmosphere. And I said, you know, that's what makes it special. It's not one particular thing. It's a combination of a lot of things that make things really special. And, you know, you were talking about stress a while ago. I try to use analogies like this within my own life. You know, stress, I can get the best tire on the market put on my car. And you know what? If I inflate that car too much or that tire too much, it's going to be a really rough ride. Yeah. But with the right balance and the right pressure air, it's really smooth. And so I think for me personally, just sitting out in the backyard and you know, you think about, boy, God's really blessed us with this, or that's really that special. It's not one thing. It's a lot of things. And society today, to me, dictates, I got to have this right now because it's instantaneous.
That's good. You know, I think that none of us are perfect at this. You know, and I think that some of us Some of us have a difficult time finding time. I mean, I'm just amazed at single moms and single dads and those people who have so much to juggle and have so much to do, and still there are moments when they find time to just still and slow down. Well, I really appreciate you talking. Is there anything else you'd like to say, like to encourage us to, as far as when it comes to, you know, just kind of the culture of now and the culture of intensity?
You know, the only thing that and it just crossed my mind, you know, in sports, and I think it's kind of like our walk today, we have two objectives, and that's to win and to teach life lessons. Unfortunately, no one likes to learn life lessons because we don't like to go through adversity. Yeah. And, you know, adversity is part of the walk. And it either gets you or you get it, you win it over. And so I think it all goes back. I wish I had all the answers, because you can ask any of our fans on Friday night, I definitely don't have them.
That's right.
So,
That's exactly right.
Live with that. But choose to be you.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it, Hal. Thank you. Hal Wasson. Thank you, sir. I really do appreciate him coming up and talking, because, you know, when this adversity is very real. Anytime you go against the culture, you are going to feel it in any way, at any level. So you're asking yourself, okay, we know this is good. We know we need to slow down, but how and why is it that important? Well, there's some scriptures that I wanted to bring up. Matthew 11 is one of these, and it says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." I want to encourage you, the life that God has for us is not a life filled with busy work. It's a life filled with His work, His presence, His calling. And He wants us to find rest. But rest can only come whenever we intentionally slow down. When we find moments to be still. When we stop looking at the world and trying to keep up. When we find our fulfillment in the one who created us. Psalm 37 says this, "Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for Him. Do not fret when people succeed in their ways, when they carry out their wicked schemes." A lot of times we see everyone else succeeding and we want our best to keep up. Wait patiently for God, because you know what? He's going to keep His promises. He wants us to be still and to know that He is God. I mean, after all, didn't God rest on the seventh day of creation? He built it in to creation. Did He need to rest being God? I don't know. I think He's doing that for us. He didn't put in a day for us to be distracted by more of the world's stuff, but to put a day of rest in there, a rest from our busyness. And wasn't merely to sleep? No, it was a moment to reconnect, to not pay attention to our culture and our world, but to pay attention to Him, to listen to Him. So Exodus 14, Israel finds its way out of Egypt. It's a very dangerous moment. The Red Sea is in front of them. Egypt is behind them. The Pharaoh army is right behind them. And these people are terrified. You know, Pharaoh instituted this culture of scarcity. Being someone who wanted the world to know he had a lot, he continued to drive. I don't think these people had a Sabbath. Can you imagine having to work 7 days a week? Some of us says, yes, I do that all the time. But this culture, it was like that. 7 days a week, there was never enough. Why do you think he wanted more bricks? Always more bricks, more bricks, more bricks. He wanted them to continue to work, so he enslaved them, and they continued to work. And here we go. In verse 10, this is what it says. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified. They cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, "Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, 'Leave us alone. Let us serve the Egyptians'? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert." You ever had one of those pity party moments? I have. I can just see them stomping their feet and just at the end of themselves. And Moses answered the people, Do not be afraid. Stand firm, and you will see the deliverance of the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. Verse 14, the Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. Did you know the Lord wants to fight for you? All you have to do is to be still. Stand firm. Let Him fight for you. Real quickly, when we slow down, we will find rest. Our culture is telling us to speed up. The way of Jesus says, slow down. When we find ways to be still, we go against our culture, we walk towards God. And the Sabbath is not a suggestion, it is actually in the commandments. But not to fill our Sabbath with doing more as if we feel as if we are accomplishing something, but to focus on Him, His way, His life, His word, His people. There is rest in this. And when we slow down and find stillness for ourselves, we find a way to reset our focus and our attention. Sometimes being still forces us to remember what is most important. And sometimes we need to reset. Your computer needs to reset. If you don't turn it off every once in a while, it gets all buggy and glitchy, and you know what that is. It happens to us. We need to reset sometimes. And when we slow down and when we disconnect from the world, even for a moment, we find ways to connect with God. We find ways to connect with others. We find ways to connect with yourself. Disconnect so that you can connect. Because God wants us to be full of Him, His ways, His life, His spirit, His rest. And we can begin to do this by slowing down. Are you busy? Are you crazy busy? Are you managing your schedule, or is your schedule managing you? I'm going to encourage you this week, slow down, even if for a moment. Find a way to be still. Start small, 15 minutes, 5 minutes. Focus on God. Let Him fill you. In Amos, he talks about an Israelite people who have forgotten the Sabbath. All they do on the Sabbath is thinking about what they can do the next day. That's all they're thinking about. Whereas they have an appearance of rest, inside they are restless. For myself, I have found myself to be restless on many occasions. You are worthy of this rest. You are worthy of the rest that is found in Jesus Christ. You are worthy of the love that God has given you. You are worthy. Did you know that? When Jesus died on the cross, He deemed you worthy. When He rose again, He deemed you worthy. Are you a person of rest? Or are you restless? Because God says there is life and rest in me. While you were yet sinners, Christ died for you. While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. That's love. In fact, let's stand up. I want to stand up and let's say this together to ourselves. Let's all stand up. Let's say this. While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. One more time, while we were yet sinners, and together, Christ died for us. That is love. That is one whom rest can be found. That is the love that will give us peace and life and eternity and rest. That is love. And that is the love of Jesus Christ. You don't have to run after the rest of the world, because the rest is found in Jesus Christ. Find that rest and be full.